Hey guys, it's Ralph Schadel of the Massive Report Podcast coming at you live on a Monday afternoon. On tonight's episode, we're going to offer our thoughts about the team's performance yesterday as we talk about Crew SC coming back to tie against Sporting Kansas City. Jonathan has another miscue. Is the defender of old back, or can we recapture the magic that we had the last four games? What's up with Craig's substitution pattern? All the Kamara's hurt, Pedro Santos taken off. Crew SC look forward to the Vancouver Whitecaps and the first time they play since the Tony Chani Kakuta Mane trade. The Whitecaps square off against Minnesota United and sleeper agent Ethan Finley. We'll offer our predictions, probably get off the rails a couple times and have some good fun. So sit back, enjoy. The Massive Report Podcast starts now.
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report Podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head to landgrantbrewing.com for more info. And the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, the Simpsons game, also a classic one, and a dope porch. Go to www.oldnortharcadehit.com. Hit it up. It is episode 244 of this podcast. We're recording on Monday, September the 11th, 2017. And I would like to take just a kind of moment to acknowledge that. Obviously, the anniversary of the attacks in 2001. Thoughts go out to everyone impacted by the ongoing repercussions from that as well. As well as all those, our friends in Orlando and all our expat Crew SC fans and everyone down there all across Florida, the Sunshine State impacted by Hurricane Irma, as well as those still recovering in South Texas from the impacts of Hurricane Harvey. Lots of heavy stuff going on in the world right now, and our thoughts are obviously with all of those impacted, and we're going to try to provide a little bit of a welcome distraction for you for the next 45 minutes or so. My name is Bart Logan, and today we've got Patrick Murphy with us. Pat, how you doing?
I'm dandy.
That's great to hear. We've also got Ralph Schadel. Ralph, what's up?
I'm fine.
You had like 12 minutes to think of something to say.
I'm not with it. Being off for 2 weeks kind of took it out of me.
Well, okay. What did you do on your international break?
There you go. You got your way, Ralph.
Thank you. Covered the OSU game with Pat. That was fun. And then
friends
forever. And then Destiny 2 came out, and that's been ruining my life for a little bit. So there you go.
Ooh. Hey, Ralph, do you know offhand who the high school girls were that were playing after the Crew game yesterday?
Who the high school girls were?
Yeah, there was a high school soccer game that took place at Mafre right after the game.
Why on earth would I know that?
You cover women's soccer, so I thought maybe you'd be up on that.
Yeah, for the Columbus Eagles and the Chicago Red Stars, not high school.
Pat, do you have any idea, like, who's playing Friday night up in Cleveland?
I don't have,
against St. Edwards? I don't know. You cover the Buckeyes.
I'm pretty sure I have, like, a restraining order against young girls, too, because...
Ooh, I forgot about your restraining order.
Yeah.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah, we've also got Alex Stanek with us. Alex, hey, buddy, save this. Bring this back straight. I don't know what to do, man.
What were you guys talking about? I'm watching the Indians game.
Hey, there you go. Roll them tribe. Got my Bob Feller shirt on.
How about the Brownies, though, too?
Well,
they lost.
They
didn't look terrible, and they did better than the Bengals. They scored more points than the Bengals.
How sad
is it? If only
that
counted for something.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a moral victory.
Okay, so now that we've talked about every sports team in Ohio except the soccer team located in Columbus.
We haven't talked about the Cavs.
Or the Blue Jackets.
They're not playing.
Andrew Erickson's up there covering the Blue Jackets up in Michigan right now.
Oh, is that Traverse City?
Prospect.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's what happens when the newspaper in town doesn't have a Blue Jackets writer. But,
when they lose all their writers to The Athletic. Anyway.
Rest in peace, Tom Reed and Aaron Portsline. Love you.
They're not dead.
Yeah, no, it's easier to
read. They're both very alive, actually. Portsline actually also in Traverse City.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he is. Actually saw him at the Jason Isbell concert, creeped on him a couple weekends ago. Anyway,
you need a restraining order.
Anyway, we speaking of restraining orders, I think the goals at Mapfre Stadium got a restraining order from Ola Kamara last weekend, Sunday, because with the exception at least anything coming from his foot, because Crew SC struggled, everyone actually, frankly, to get any opportunities, but managed to get the draw against SKC. We will dissect that beauty of a match in, well, we'll talk about it a bit. We'll also look at some of the other, you know, aspects of that, preview of the upcoming matchup with Vancouver, the return of Tony Chani, and the reckoning for the Chani-Mane trade. Look at, maybe take a look at some of the results from the international break for a certain national team of the United States of America and their mediocre head coach Bruce Arena and mediocre results over that break. We can talk about that. Maybe look at some questions if we've got any from the people on the tweeters. Yeah, so if you've got your questions right now, start tweeting us and maybe we'll get them next week. But we'll go back to Sunday now and that snoozer of a game, Patrick, if you want to at least lead us into that, and then we can see what the heck happens.
Sorry, I'm waking up from that game. You're right when you called it a snoozer, but that's really what Kansas City does. You know, they're a team that's allowed the fewest goals in MLS. They have transitioned from a team that looks to, you know, possess and attack like Columbus to a team that looks to possess and lull you to sleep and hopes to get out of there with 1-0 results, some ties on the road. You know, that's just who they've become. It's a tactic that works. It's not always attractive. And we saw Sunday, you know, that was a team that was coming in off of a midweek game. Columbus had been off for a week, so... You know, Greg Berhalter talked after the game about maybe having a little rust, but yeah, it was a decent first half, actually. Yeah, Kansas City gets out to the early lead. Jonathan Mensah, who has been playing exceptionally well over the past month or so as Columbus has kind of gone on a run, had a Jonathan Mensah-like mistake at the back, ball kind of over the top, and he looked like he went to bicycle it. I don't know if he was spending too much time with Harrison Offal and his bicycle kick attempts while they were on Ghana international duty together. But, you know, just I don't even know if he got much of a touch on it. And it was right into the path of Lobato. And it's 1-0 Kansas City pretty early on there. You know, and my thought, given Kansas City's defensive record and the way they can kind of shut things down, was this was bad news for Columbus. And you know, there were a few chances created after that. Columbus got into the match over the second half of the first half. You know, a penalty kick shout from Ola Kamara, who on a, I don't know if it was intentional flick from Frederico Higuain, but sprung Kamara in behind. Definite contact between him and Beisler. The referee went to the review, didn't actually go over, but went to the video assistant review up in the box, and they decided that it wasn't a penalty kick. We saw it in the press box a few times. And kind of to mix reviews, we couldn't tell if Kamara initiated the contact as his leg swung back. If you went back and watched the game or were watching the game at home, Taylor Twellman read the rules right after the half and said that he thought, based on, you know, denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, I think, with any contact, it should have been a penalty kick. So take that for what it is, they didn't get one. But a few minutes later, Ola Kamara puts one in right before halftime. A great ball sent in near post by Pedro Santos, and he heads it home with some vigor. Said after the game that he was still angry about the non-call on the penalty kick, and used that kind of as fuel to get that goal. And then the second half, it was mostly Kansas City. You know, Columbus had a couple chances, including another one from Ola Kamara that he whiffed on pretty badly. Federico Higuain had a good opportunity that Tim Mila came up with a big save, but, you know, Kansas City controlled a lot of the possession. Columbus, you know, I wrote about it today, some interesting changes, taking off Kamara, who was coming back from a bit of an injury over the international break, so that's understandable, but taking off Pedro Santos, who's supposed to be fully fit, he said after the game that he felt good, and bringing on Christian Martinez. Neither Christian Martinez nor Adam John gave you much of anything. And then bringing on Harrison Offal for Hector Jimenez, Greg said after the game that it was a fitness thing. You know, Hector just looked fatigued. But you have Justin Merrim out there who's been running all game, hadn't been very effective after coming back from Iraq. You know, that's quite the plane ride across the world. You know, he got back Thursday. He played for Iraq, so definitely some tired legs, yet he plays 90 minutes. We've talked about Greg Berhalter's substitutions before. Some have worked, some have not. I thought this was one of the poorer days. But Columbus gets a draw. That makes it 7 points from the three-game homestand, which I think if you'd told them ahead of time, you know, you'd take 7 points on that homestand, they'd probably settle for that. Still unbeaten in five. And next week they head out to Vancouver. Actually, they head out to Vancouver on Wednesday. So, yeah, an interesting game. Actually, not an interesting game, but an interesting result, and we'll see where that puts them. Still fourth in the East as of right now.
I didn't have a lot of expectations coming into this game, basically, because Sporting Kansas City has the lowest amount of goals allowed in the league. They are one of the most defensively stout teams in Major League Soccer. Offensively as well, I figured they weren't really going to do much because they have, I believe, the fifth lowest goal scored. You know, Minnesota United, I think, is beating them on the list, if I'm not mistaken. But going back to the penalty kick situation, I was privileged enough to be standing in the north area right by the stage there. Saw it bird's eye view. And, you know, unpopular opinion time, I think Beisler got it. I think Kamara went down slightly easy because he seemed to move his leg through. Beisler got the ball first. He went to swing his leg. The ball was no longer there. He fell down. I think it was a great play by Beisler. Tricky, 50-50 in the heat of the moment. I have no envy for Chris Penso in the moment because, you know, it's pretty tough to make that call initially. But looking at the review and when they stopped, I'm glad VAR took time to look at it. But I think they got the call right in the end.
Ralph, I'm gonna have to – I'm not saying they got the call right or wrong, but – Kamara had, I mean, the contact occurred as Kamara was in front of Beisler with the ball, and Beisler, whether he had made the contact or whether Kamara made the contact, it was his back, you know, his leg was swinging backwards.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Beisler never won the ball. I mean, it was Kamara's ball. So, you know, if you're going to, I don't think you can make that part of the argument. The argument that I made, at least in the press box when we were talking about it, was that, you know, Beisler didn't know much about it. Kamara's leg hit him. Now, according to Taylor Twellman, that doesn't really matter in the rules. So, you know, I don't know if it necessarily makes a difference. You know, if they score that goal, they probably don't then score on the corner, or maybe they don't. You know, Ola seemed pretty adamant that, you know, he was still angry and used that to, as I said, kind of fire him up on that corner kick. So, you know, you might end up with the same result anyway, but, you know, it's weird. You go to video review and, you know, you don't even have the referee take a look at it over on the side. I'm still very, very questionable about this whole video review thing and whether it's actually benefiting anyone right now. There have been some good calls. There have been some questionable calls. I'll say that. But, you know, I think there's still a lot of kinks to work out.
I think it's the most polished league, you know, having watched it in Serie A and Bundesliga. I think it's the most polished, and I will have to say and give pro referees a, you know, kind of a tip of the hat because they seem to at least be more familiar with the technology. Some of the things I've seen in Bundesliga and Serie A have been kind of a little hair-raising and a little questionable. But, Bart, you want to add to the long con discussion, it seems?
I'm just pointing it out. I think it's just evidence, as we brought it up, I think, in the last episode, that VAR is and was most likely, you know, when that game, they had the Cruesi in, what, three different occasions with VAR within the game, all of them going Cruesi's way. And, you know, we all thought here, hey, this is obviously the setup for a long con by Don Garber, and really VAR's in here to hold the Cruesi down. Is it's just really actually just Tinder on Don Garber's phone, where he says swipes left or right if he likes it, and
he
wanted to make
it.
Do you
think he pays for that Tinder?
Oh, yeah, Don Garber definitely pays for Tinder.
Okay.
How much? 100%. The $10 one?
That's my favorite quote in the history of this podcast. Don Garber definitely pays for Tinder.
It's, I mean, obviously, you know, that was, that's just another way where the institution of MLS has it in for Columbus Crew SC. It's obvious now.
Yeah, aside from that one call, I thought Penso, and I've not been a fan of him in MLS in general, but I thought he had a rough day. I mean, you know, gives Jonathan mm-hmm. Mensah a yellow card after two fouls really early. You know, neither of those fouls were great, but you know, that's just a really early to set the tone. Then he has to give Espinoza, and Berhalter talked about this after the game, then he has to give Espinoza a card, you know, a couple minutes later because it's his second foul in quick succession. So, you know, he just kind of set the tone early that he was going to give cards in what ended up being a fairly defensive game. And just some interesting calls. You know, the Berhalter even brought it up afterwards that in his eyes he thought that was too early to start giving out cards and whatnot. And then you have the penalty kick situation, and there were a few other ones too. But, you know, we're not here to, I guess, talk about the referees when they don't royally screw things up. But, you know, it was just, you know, maybe it was because it was a Sunday afternoon game and he's not used to those. I don't know. It was just a weirdly officiated game, I thought.
Was this even a defensive game, or was this just a game where the offense on both sides was so abysmally poor that we only remember the defense? I mean, you had
that might be fair.
Yeah, that's one
good moment from Ola Kamara where he magically transformed into Marco Van Basten for 5 minutes, and then he spends the other 85 minutes or however many minutes he actually played because he got yanked for Adam John.
64.
Yeah, 64 minutes playing like Marco's Pizza. I mean, it was pathetic.
Nothing wrong with a little Marco's Pizza, but not on the pitch.
And I was watching from the retired Nordeca Southside Casuals section, also known as the Upper 90 Club, and there were 15 different times during that game where I would look down at the north end when Sporting Kansas City were attacking, and I thought, oh, here we go, we're going to concede. And they would balloon the ball 50 feet over the goal, or they would shank it, or they would dribble into nobody. Justin Merrim dribbled into nobody like 15 times, although one time he dribbled through five guys that he was Leo Messi, and I have no idea how he did that still.
It's that Justin Merrim once a game. You know, yeah. He's always got one.
Yeah, I know, and it's almost worth it. I mean, it really is almost worth it.
It's like,
just like let him dribble.
It's like a batting average, you know. It's like he gets it when if you execute that like one or three out of 10 times, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I thought Justin didn't have a god awful game. My man of the match was Mohamed Abu, and it was not even mm-hmm. close.
Yeah,
I thought
agree.
He was phenomenal. And I don't, you know, I don't know who they replaced the Mohamed Abu of April with, but whoever the new Mohamed Abu is a really, really talented player. But yeah, I mean, the offense in this game did not do basically anything on either side. I felt like this game could have easily been 4-0 for the Crew. It could have easily been 4-0 for Sporting Kansas City. I thought both teams gave up a lot of really quality chances, except that the offense on both sides of the pitch was so terrible that they wasted all their opportunities. It was a truly bizarre game. Peak MLS, I think you have to say. I mean, this was one of the games that you just watch and you're like, okay, MLS is going to MLS. We have to move on to the next one before I drive myself crazy. But really weird game. Abu was great. Everybody else kind of sucked except for 5 minutes where Ola Kamara was insane. He was great.
Well, and I think to follow up on that in terms of, you know, not having lost 4-0. I think that the defense for the Crew, aside from the mental lapse that Jonathan Mensah had, was pretty solid. You know, Kansas City, as I said earlier, controlled a lot of the second half, especially late in the game. It looked like, you know, they were going to find a way to get a late goal. Kansas City's done it at Mafre before. But, you know, there were a couple big tackles in the box. Josh Williams played, I thought, pretty well in the second half. He gave away the ball a few times in the first half in some bad positions, but, you know, just making tackles. Hector Jimenez had one real late, or maybe it was Harrison Awful because Hector wasn't on. I'm not sure. One of the right backs had one real late that was a big interception right in the box, you know. So, you know, credit to the defense for Columbus, which is not something we've said a ton this year, more recently, you know, and Berhalter made the comment after the game that, you know, this is a game that early in the season they probably would have lost because they would have given up a late goal or whatnot. You know, I don't know if I necessarily agree that. They had some pretty good performances in certain games, like, you know, the first Toronto game in Columbus where they come from behind and whatnot. But, you know, the point is they were able to kind of hold things down defensively when a team is putting on a lot of pressure. And if they can continue to do things like that, that's a good sign if and when they make the playoffs, because they're going to need to grind out results on the road most likely.
I want to go back to what you kind of mentioned, Mohamed Abu, Alex, and I'd say he was also probably my player of the match as well. I mean, he reminds me, it kind of feels like he's taken a turn somewhat reminiscent of Tony Chani in 2014, where you saw him in a course that is different because Tony Chani, even for the difficulty he went through in that campaign, he was a starter virtually the entire season. But there's a lot of frustration with fans with Tony Chani. You saw he had the vision for a lot of the long passes and long balls, but they always seemed to be a little bit late or a little bit early, wouldn't quite connect. And I think we saw that a lot with Mohamed Abu earlier in the season as well. So he's getting used to playing with his teammates, playing at this level, playing in the pitch, dealing with the weather, whatever it may be, getting used to the system. But he's really, over the past 3-4 games, seems to have really hit his stride. He seems comfortable out there, whether he's playing with Will Trapp or whether he's playing with Artur. And he's been such a pleasant surprise. To think of where we were looking at, you know, what before the All-Star break, certainly before this international break, and what we were looking at with that Mohamed Abu, and, you know, talking about what is his future place with this team as a guy who's taking up an international spot. So you need to be getting some value out of him. And now you look at the three of him with Will Trapp and Artur, and you can see a pretty solid rotation where they can just be pushing each other, and you've got the most informed guy in.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I've been thinking about this since the match. When Artur is fully fit again, I would really like to see Artur and Abu play side by side in a match. I mean, I like Will Trapp a lot. I think he's had a pretty solid season so far. I think he's been quietly very solid. But I want to see that combination, because I think Abu and Artur are both capable of playing really good long key passes. And I don't know if I see that very often from Will Trapp. I think he's more of kind of a short pass guy, more of an anchor man.
He can play the long ball.
Yeah, to a degree, I think. I don't know. It's a matchup I would like to see. Mm-hmm. I think that having Abu and Artur would be a very interesting combination. You could call them the double A. How about that?
Oh, and it looked
like I don't like that.
Double A battery?
I don't like the nickname.
Well, it's bad. He also gives you, and you know, not that he's scored yet, but he's a threat to take a shot. He had at least, I believe, the one shot from a bit outside the box that, yeah, it rose over yesterday. But just to have that, because Will Trapp, you know, for everything he brings to the game, that scoring threat and has never really been part of it. So to just have, as we talk about, you know, often with the three in the back versus four in the back, how anytime you're forcing a team to kind of game plan for something, even if you don't utilize it, that's a positive. The same thing with having a central midfielder that, you know, there's a chance that he might tee one up and crack a shot. And you don't really see that with Artur too often, certainly not with Will Trapp. I think he's got one, maybe two goals in his career. So to add that element, I think is a nice thing for Greg Berhalter to have.
Yeah, well, and Alex, you mentioned when Artur is fully fit. I think he is fully fit. You know, we watched them scrimmage, Pittsburgh on, I want to say, Wednesday or Tuesday. And he played the first half of that, looked, you know, normal. He's been training full. I think that this was just a case of going with the combination that's been working. You know, they've found a back line that they like. That's a midfield duo that's you know, been in form recently. Abu's obviously, as you mentioned, kind of found his spot, found his comfort zone. And it's interesting that, you know, it's come at around the same time, you know, maybe a little bit after, but that Jonathan Mensah did. And, you know, obviously both these guys are Ghanaians coming over from, you know, over in Europe, you know, to a new league. Obviously, Abu got here well before Jonathan did, But you know, I think we tend as people watching this team to expect these guys to be ready to go week one. And we've talked about it with Jonathan that, you know, reasons that maybe he wasn't and that it took him a while to kind of find some form. You know, same might be true with Mohamed Abu that you know, he didn't look great early on. Artur obviously took that spot pretty quickly. And, you know, maybe Mohamed wasn't given a fair shot at, you know, a handful of games in there. But, you know, I think he certainly found it. And Artur's going to have to win that spot back, it looks like, because he's playing well. And I thought Will Trapp played a pretty good game. You know, Kansas City has some talent in the middle of the field, and it was relatively neutralized with Will in there. And, you know, didn't give the ball away, was solid defensively. You know, they both were. I thought it was a solid performance by the central midfield pairing in general.
You had some other solid performances from Crew SC. Of course, you mentioned Josh Williams and the performance as well from Yuka Raitala, who looked a little bit more engaged than he has been in some past games. Physical, but some nice movement there on the left side with Justin Miram. And I'm curious, your thoughts, fellas, on that left back position. Do you think it's still? Do you think Greg Berhalter is eventually going to go with whether it's Francis or Raitala, or is it just going to be a matter of who's hot, who's healthy?
Yeah, probably. I mean, most likely, who's hot and who's healthy at this point. You know, we saw Waylon start to kind of lock down that spot. Then he gets hurt again. You know, and he's been working way back. Has been limited in training, but it looks like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if is when he's more available. But yeah, I thought he played well as well. You know, I think it's nice to have both of those guys that any given week one can step in and have a good performance. You know, I think the most interesting thing will be what they did in the off season. You know, do you want to keep two starting caliber left backs, or do you want to pick one and kind of roll with it? I'm not sure where Waylon stands with his contract, but this might be towards the end of his contract at the least. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out. But yeah, it's very much been back and forth this year, and I don't know if one guy has really locked it down, in my mind at least.
We talked a little bit about it earlier, but I do want to circle back to the substitution decisions for Greg Berhalter. You mentioned the double sub, bringing on Christian Martinez for Pedro Santos, who, you know, up to that point had probably been the most electric player for Crew SC that day. And then, of course, notably Ola Kamara coming off as well for Adam John. With John, we've kind of outlined some of our disappointments with his, at least on the field, performance. His online performance is still A+. But I'm curious as to your thoughts, Ralph and Alex, about the substitution decisions by Greg Berhalter. They've come under our criticism, and criticism from a lot of fans throughout the season, and not giving us much reason to move away from that last Sunday.
The thing that perplexed me particularly in this game was the fact that, albeit Ola didn't look the best, rumor on the street is that he was fighting an injury, and that this
not,
may have...
Not a rumor, can't confirm.
Can confirm.
Only trained that, twice over the international break.
So he was hurt. It was likely that was a planned substitution, and...
Also can confirm.
There you go. So We're throwing facts out left and right here, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, so you have Adam John on there, and this is something that worries me a little bit, is there were a couple balls, I feel like, and I don't know how Alex may feel or the rest of the panel may feel, that a striker with some pace could have easily got it on the other end of them. Instead, they're right in the arms of Tim Melia, and they're starting the Kansas City attack the other way. Adam John is great in the air. He's not great with the ball at his feet, regardless of what his social media handles may have said at one point. I will go on record and say that I believe I am better with the ball at my feet, and I could probably beat him in a 40-yard dash. And I'm a very large man, for those of you that have seen me in real life. But I digress. I can't understand Adam John. I would love to get behind him. He's a great guy. I've had great conversations with him, but I just can't get behind it. We need a backup striker. And today I've been hooting and hollering, and I know that a lot of people disagree with me, but what's wrong with throwing two forwards up there, having Nico Hansen sit back and play in a support role and see if he can't feed Ola a little bit? I know it's a completely whacked out theory, and I know a lot of people are calling me crazy for that, but you know, we can discuss that here in a second. And then Christian Martinez. Look, I understand that we have a great dynamic young player with Christian Martinez, but Kakuta Mane was totally, totally ready to go. And after Christian Martinez's little diving incident against Dallas where he got fined, I don't know, Pat, how much money did he get fined on that?
I don't know.
Okay. It was a lot of money. He doesn't make a lot of money either. So, you know, I just, to somebody, I've never loved diving. I understand it's part of the game. I know it's gamesmanship, and I get it. But he's a young kid, but you've got Kakuta Mane. You've got to go for the goal. You've got to get points, because people were throwing this out there that Berhalter seems comfortable in sixth place. And going for a tie against Sporting Kansas City isn't going to advance you at all in the Eastern Conference. You know, if anything, who won this week? Chicago got a draw, so they didn't move. Atlanta won. You know, everybody was pretty successful with the exception of Montreal, who's behind us, which is great. It creates space.
And NYC lost.
But
the Kurosi has no chance of catching up to them.
Yeah, no, you're not going to catch one or two, so it's basically 3, 4, 5, and 6 that are up for grabs. And it's just, if I'm Greg Berhalter against a Peter Vermes stingy defense, I'm throwing all my big guns at them and seeing if I can't at least get 3 points out of this. I understand the 1 point argument, and you've kind of got to have the to have what we hold situation. But man, for the soccer skeptic that doesn't want to convert to watching soccer, that was your game right there, because that was the biggest snoozer I've ever seen in my life.
I have seen bigger snoozers than this, but not...
Yeah, you should watch Italian soccer like Alex.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you think this is bad. Wake up for Chievo v. Bologna at 7:30 a.m.
Hey, Jose Altidore, or not Jose, Jose Mourinho is my coach, and he can park the bus with the best of them. So, you know.
Yeah, but when he parks the bus, it's at least borderline entertaining. But getting back
be
to
champions.
What we were... Getting back to what we were talking about, yeah, you know, I would actually, and I know this is going to seem crazy to a lot of people, and maybe for good reason, but I would be tempted to play Christian Martinez in more of a central role. Maybe not as as your number 9 striker, but maybe right behind that striker. I know some people don't like the diving. Some people don't like the kind of dark art stuff that he seems to be getting.
Can we call him Voldemort?
Well, the you know,
that's John
might be
Shelby.
Benny. That might be Benny Fowlhaber, because he's pretty good at dark arts, too.
So I was watching
Brad Guzan
in this last game, and the player, I don't know, I was thinking to myself while I watched this, I said, you know, I was thinking, if he was just slightly better defensively, he would basically be like Gennaro Gattuso was for the Italian national team in the mid-2000s. This kind
I think
of
he needs to be more than slightly.
Yeah.
Scrappy, this scrappy, aggressive,
he lacks
run
any
all
sort
the time
of type defensive of awareness.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's basically an attacking Gattuso in some weird way. He's this little, quick, aggressive, annoying player who just gets under the other team's skin, gets kicked a lot, dives sometimes. I think it would be interesting.
Did you just describe Christian Pulisic?
Ooh, I'm not touching that. I'm not
stay
touching
to
that.
It. Stay tuned to the next segment for that one.
I'm going to get American Outlaws people being like, how dare you? Not worth it. But no, I think he's an interesting option. I would have been tempted to put Mane on the wing and put Martinez in the middle and then have him and Higuain kind of flip around kind of basically without a striker.
So
play
a false nine?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically play Martinez as a false nine and have the two wingers kind of do their thing. Because the thing about John, Adam John is really good when you're up 2-1. And you need a player who can hold the ball up, who can be an outlet to, you know, kick the ball forward and just, you know, defend it in a corner, something like that, kill off the last 10 minutes of a game. I don't think he's particularly good with his head. I don't think he's particularly good with his feet. And he's not paid to be. He's a backup on a low contract. So I still think that we should have signed another striker. I've been on the record with that for a very long time, but we didn't. And so I would just
not
go
for
without.
Lack of trying. FYI.
Yeah, not for lack of trying, but I would go without. I would go with a false nine type situation, or I would go with a two striker situation, because I think if you just tried to replace Ola Kamara with Adam John, one for one straight swap, tactics don't change, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. So I do think he kind of conceded the game a little bit in whatever the 65th minute or whatever it was. But the way Ola was playing, even if he's hurt, I thought that he was really not on it. And in situations like that, I don't have a problem with you yanking a player off and saying, hey, be better next game. We still love you, but be better next game. Ola is a beloved figure in Columbus already, I think. And fans aren't going to turn on him, but that performance was unacceptable.
Well, and I think I agree he was not at his best. You can get a goal that he did not being at your best, coming off of a two-week span when you only trained twice. You know, I mean, you could ask for worse performances.
I actually am. This will be maybe a first for me on Massive Report. I'm going to take back my comment. Yeah, you're right. That goal was a really quality finish. And if you get a goal from your striker in a game, it's hard to say that it was an unacceptable performance. But he had a couple whiffs that I thought he needed to do better on.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I know that's been the criticism of him, is he scores some of the hard goals and doesn't score maybe some of the easier finishes. And, you know, we had a piece up, I think, last week about, you know, trying to debunk that. And you can check that out and see what you think. But, you know, the play where he gets played through and goes to hit it with his left foot in the second half, and just, I mean, he just missed the ball when he swung through. Like, you know, that's a big opportunity there. And, you know, a guy who is, you know, on 15 goals for the season already, you kind of expect him to at least make contact with the ball there, if not put it on frame and force a save. You know, so, yeah, it definitely wasn't his best performance. But, like I said, I think you get a goal out of him, I think you're okay with that. Maybe not happy, but okay. And, you know, you hope he gets a good week of training this week and, you know, can come out. I mean, you know, the guy's one goal away from, you know, tying what he did last year. You know, he's done it in more games. But, you know, I think all in all, and, you know, Alex, you've obviously talked about this a lot in this podcast, he's one of the more underrated guys in MLS, and, you know, one off day I think is not too bad of an issue,
for sure.
Yeah, I think we'll let Ola off the hook for that one. And another thing, and you know, just from a fan perspective, you look at the players that came over to Nordic and the supporter section afterwards, and that always, you know, win, loss, draw, which just the fourth of the season for Columbus on Sunday. To see Ola go up there, I think that's one of the reasons that you kind of alluded to, Pat, why he's not in danger of losing the backing of the supporters anytime soon.
Correct, yeah. I mean, they seem to love him for sure.
But, you know, looking kind of elsewhere with that, you did mention with that that result, Kurosi had the chance to move into or tie Chicago on points with a win. They did not. And as a result, are in fourth in the standings, 3 points ahead of New York Red Bulls. But Red Bulls have 2 games in hand. Atlanta United, they are 4 points ahead, though Atlanta has 4 games in hand. Importantly, though, thanks to the favorable result for New England Revolution beating Montreal last week, Montreal 2 games in hand still against Columbus, but they have 7 points back. So Columbus looks pretty comfortable in that sixth spot. But as we kind of talked about and we've talked about a bit, is that a position that Columbus should feel comfortable in? You know, looking at it, you obviously still, as much as we want to maybe criticize them for that result, we're also staring at a 5-game unbeaten streak.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking about it because Twellman was talking about the teams below him, and, you know, it's going to take a lot for Montreal to come and catch them. But, you know, I still don't necessarily feel comfortable that this team is going to make the playoffs. You know, a win, I think, would have, you know, that. And now you have to, you know, I think they only have two more games at home, three on the road. The on the road now, we've talked about before, they may be a C team on the last day of the season being locked up, so it could be an easier game, but still on the road. And I just, I don't know, it's not a comfortable position in my mind. That home streak of wins continue. I think that's where they need to be the most successful to guarantee themselves a spot. You never know what other teams are going to do. I think Andrew Erickson told me the other day that he did the math and 2-2 over the final six, and that included this Kansas City game, that Montreal would have had to go 4-2-2, which is, you know, a lot to ask from a team. But, you know, do you want to be in that sixth spot going into the postseason? I think obviously you'd like to be high, as high as possible, but, you know, somewhere around third or fourth seems realistic if they can, you know, better perform than they did yesterday. But I'm not entirely sold that this is all, you know, locked up yet.
You know, one of the things, and I feel maybe a little bit more optimistic than Pat, because I'm taking a look. I'm really kind of deeming Atlanta United as our main threat, basically. And I just took a look at their schedule, guys. They have six games in the next 2 weeks. And that's, they're going Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, back to Wednesday, Saturday. And this is, you know, congratulations, you've opened up a new stadium, but now you have to play a lot. And, you know, I imagine with the hurricane kind of going through there too, there was a chance, I heard, that their match could have been postponed against FC Dallas. But luckily, the storm kind of, I say luckily, but unfortunately there was still destruction there. The hurricane got slowed down, so they were able to get the game in. But I don't see, you know, you have home field advantage, but that's a rough stretch.
Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, you got to win the, you know, the one thing about having games in hand is you've got to take advantage and win them. And, you know, I don't think, but, you know, you never know. It's MLS, crazier things have happened.
Speaking of rough stretches, you could say there's been a little bit of one for the U.S. men's national team over the international break, notably the loss to Costa Rica. And, of course, yesterday, Alexi Lawless, the former men's national team central defender, noted crotchety old man and Fox Sports commentator, had some choice words to say for the men's national team representatives, the likes of Jozy Altidore, who's gotten his fair share of call-outs on this program as well. Ralph, roll the tape.
Tim Howard. Tim, the Belgium game ended 3 years ago. We need you to save the ball now. Jeff Cameron, clean it up or let's get someone who will. Clint Dempsey, yeah, you're a national team legend. Now we need you to be a national team leader. Michael Bradley, the U.S. does not need you to be Zen. The U.S. needs you to play better. Jozy Altidore, is this really as good as it gets? Because it's still not good enough. Bruce Arena. Bruce, Jurgen Klinsmann lost at home to Mexico. You lost at home to Costa Rica. This is now all on you, not Jurgen. Oh, and by the way, to all the guys that I didn't mention, it because you don't even warrant to mention. And that includes you too, Wonder Boy. So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires? You are a soccer generation that has been given everything. You are a soccer generation who is on the verge of squandering everything. So, now it's time to pay it back. Make us believe again. If you don't owe it to yourselves, you owe it to us. And get off my lawn.
So, obviously, a lot to kind of take apart there. But first of all, guys, what is Alexi Lawless just, again, being said crotchety old man? Or is there really something something at issue with this men's national team. I certainly believe that to be the case, but I do not like Bruce Arena and didn't like that hiring decision. I think it's the hens coming home to roost right now. What's everyone else think?
I mean, Okay. I'm with you, Bart. I think, I was kind of I was rather aggravated with Bruce Arena, quote unquote, coming home back to the men's national team. I thought it was more steps backwards than it was forward. I understand that, you know, you're looking towards the future with prospects like Pulisic, maybe Jeff Cameron, if I say that, or Fabian Johnson. But the big thing I hammered home, and I believe it was the last time that we were on air, was his reluctancy to kind of give up on the past vis-a-vis DeMarcus Beasley, who struggled notably during the Honduras game. Maybe an Omar Gonzalez, who has kind of not really had a good return to form. I know Jeff Cameron, who I just mentioned a few moments ago, hasn't looked very good. And he's omitted players that have had, you know, a pretty nice run of success with the United States. DeAndre Yedlin or somebody of that sort. But, let's dissect it again. And the guy that we love to call out on this show, Jozy Altidore, he's athletic, he's talented, he's a big man, but we don't get his best effort. And I think, you know, his decline started back when he was in Sunderland before he ended back with TFC.
That can be said about a lot of players, though.
But, you know, I think his decline started back in Sunderland. And, you know, it's just the guy is good, and unless he's not scoring, unless he's diving. And I'm sorry to be completely honest with everybody out there, and if this may come as a shock for everybody, but he's not scoring unless he's diving. Michael Bradley's great, but he's a very cerebral player. He can't vocalize his leadership at all or anything like that. Clint Dempsey's great, but he loves to tear up notebooks of referees during the U.S. Open Cup. You know, and, I mean, Pulisic's wonderful, but Honduras basically decided that they're going to throw everybody in, the old guy in Section 102, at him, and he just couldn't really stop. He couldn't get past anybody. They were fouling him hard, and you could see they were getting to him because they were rattling him. He wasn't having his way on the field. You know, so I think if there's a way to have a youth movement but kind of keep this team competitive, I think we need to start looking that way, and maybe some players need to start not getting call-ups because of name recognition. You need to start looking at maybe your Linton Gooches or I'm trying to think of a couple of the other youth players that are abroad. Or we even talked about goalie crops necessarily. Bring in your Bill Hamid, your Zach Steffens. I'll even say Cody Cropper, because Cody Cropper's a great goalkeeper. Hell, after yesterday, I'll take Tim Melia on the national team. But you have to kind of get this usher the older generation out and get the younger generation in.
I'm not that concerned about that side of it. I mean, I think guys like Altidore and Bradley are both, you know, the right age team and talented players. I've seen Altidore score plenty of goals without diving, but I do think that there's something brewing in a negative sense with this team right now. You know, Bart, obviously you mentioned the loss to Costa Rica where it was just uninspired. The game in Honduras, they didn't look much better. You know, obviously it was hot and gross and whatnot, but that's a game you kind of need to have. And you know, it took a second half late goal from Bobby Wood, who comes off the bench, to get them just a result, which I think was a fine result. You know, the U.S. has not been historically great in Honduras, and they you know, schedule those games to kind of ruin any hope of the U.S. winning. But, you know, it's Bruce Arena came back, and there were mixed results on that, and then he was doing well, the team was succeeding, and, you know, that was fine, but the issues that were there under Klinsmann are still there. I mean, and it's not just something that's going to get fixed quickly because you have a pool of players to select from. You're trying to qualify for a World Cup. You know, it's not like he took over, you know, at a time when he could experiment a ton. You've got to get this team to the World Cup. You know, they should do it. We were talking before the podcast, and, you know, it's very likely that they'll be fine and they'll get there. And we've seen a team like Mexico have to go through, you know, a qualification stage beyond the hex and then do really well at the World Cup. So you never know what happens. But right now, not on good form. That Costa Rica game was just disappointing. And the Honduras game didn't, you know, do that much. I mean, defensively, The center backs are a mess. Just no guys that seem to have confidence. They're still using DeMarcus Beasley at left back, which just shows how little depth there is at that position in the United States. You mentioned Yedlin. You know, I've never been a huge Yedlin fan, but it would be nice to see him back just because it gives you something different on the right side, whether he plays in the back or in the midfield. You know, Graham Zusi is a fine MLS defender. We saw him yesterday. He did a fine job against Justin Merrim, but at the international level, that's not a position I think he can play capably. So, you know, there are definitely some questions with this team, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what they do, assuming they qualify for the World Cup, in the build-up to the World Cup to kind of figure some of those out.
Well, and you mentioned that, and of course, obviously, you know, Yedlin, partially as a Newcastle fan, I could say, you know, he's been also dealing with some injury issues, so I think he's just been made it to fitness and was on the bench last weekend, but I think he may have still been injured when they named this roster, so that might have a bit of an explanation for that. But certainly no explanation for you know, a lot of the other old men that you see on that team, and certainly results like that. If we're going to criticize, as Lexi did say, you know, if you're going to hold that Mexico loss against Jurgen to the degree that it certainly was on home ground, you certainly can't overlook that Costa Rica loss, even in that thing, even in, you know, this short bit of circumstances, that short timeline that Arena's been given.
Yeah, but I also think that you have to take the totality of what Jurgen did and kind of compare that against the totality of what Bruce Arena's done. I mean, with Jurgen, you had Mexico beating the United States at home. Then you had Costa Rica beating us 4-0. And then
you also would have beaten Belgium if it weren't for...
Let's not go there. I don't know what you're talking about. Leave it in the past. It was one mistake, okay? One mistake. He's still my boy. But you had Bruce take over, and then we beat Honduras 6-0. Got a draw in Panama against Panama. We beat Trinidad and Tobago, right? And then we got a 1-1 draw against Mexico in Mexico. I mean, these are not terrible results. The problem with Jurgen is in the hex, they were bad result after bad result. And so I still think you had one crappy game from Bruce's team. The other results, for the most part, are okay. So I don't know. I think there's been an improvement with the coaching change.
Quick question, and we don't have to dwell on this too long, just this entire thing. We've got the Vancouver game also to speak about. But honest to God, if someone had told you after, you know, elimination against Belgium back in 2014 that, you know, heading into the final stages of the hex and qualifications, and ostensibly if they are to make it into the World Cup, that Tim Howard would still be the number one choice at goalkeeper, what would you say?
I would say, yeah, I'm not
biased
surprised.
Because I love Tim Howard.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Patrick.
I think
pretty good level.
Patrick, but okay.
You can hear me?
Yeah, nope. We got you.
Well, now we got you.
I think that he's still performing at a pretty decent level, and you know, he's a starting goalkeeper in MLS, which we've seen that succeed before, but...
there are 20 starting, you know, goalkeepers in MLS.
Sure.
22.
But I mean,
22, sorry.
Right, but I mean, you know, I guess my question is, you know, who else gives you, you know, the leadership, the confidence, and the experience that he has?
Brad Guzan.
You know, yeah, no. And, you know, yes, we can bring in the young guys, and I think they should, and I think they should at least get experience of being in camp and things like that, but... You know, I just can't say for certain that any other goalie is better for this team defensively than Tim Howard. And I, you know, I look at these last two games and I'm not sure I blame him for the goals. You know, maybe the first one against Costa Rica, he could have done a little bit better. But, you know, when your center backs are outside playing about as far out as your outside backs are, that leaves a lot of space in there. And you know, it was just a mistake defensively. you know, again, I'm a big Tim Howard fan. I have been for a long time, so maybe I'm a little biased on that, but you know, it's not all that surprising to me, I guess.
So I have a somewhat serious, but not really serious, suggestion. If everybody is so unhappy with Bruce Arena, and if we're still playing DeMarcus Beasley when he's 35 years old, I say we bring another 35-year-old back, and we make Landon Donovan player manager of the United States men's national team, so we can get some veteran presence in the locker room who can also maybe coach, but probably not. But it'll be fun. That would be fun.
Landon Donovan would 100% think he could pull that off. All of that. He probably thinks he still could play and should be playing for the national team. It's like in the U.S., it's the only thing. Everywhere else in Europe, it's like you retire from playing for the national team before you retire from playing for club. And Landon Donovan be like, nah, I've been retired from play. I'm just going to play for the national team and manage it. What the hell, I'm the greatest player of all time.
Well, he is the greatest player of all time. And I actually think...
Anywhere?
Right now.
Or just in the U.S.?
Just in the U.S. Just in the U.S.
Just checking you there.
The greatest player of all time worldwide is Ricardo Kaká. We've talked about this before on past podcasts.
Who's not Radamel right? Falcao?
No, he's number two. Number three behind Paolo Maldini. But I actually think that would be fun. And we would get knocked out of the World Cup in the group stage, but it would be fun. And we're not going to win the World Cup anyway. So, you know. What the heck? I'm not being totally serious, but people don't want Bruce Arena, but who else are you going to get, really? You're going to end up with Jason Kreis as the U.S. national team coach, and no thank you. So,
Greg
Bruce for
Berhalter.
Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's certainly...
Tata Martina.
Tell you what, tweet us your U.S. men's national team head coach selections.
Patrick Murphy.
Using that hashtag MRPod and at the Massive Report.
I ain't got time for that.
If we've got any really good ones, ideally tweet them actually like next Monday around 6:30. But I'll scroll down through the feed and look for them if you got any good ones, and we'll call out some of the best suggestions next week when we record next week's podcast. But moving on, we'll have a game to speak about on that against certain Vancouver Whitecaps taking on the Canadian team. Vancouver right now in the Western Conference are making their way up to third now in the standings after a pretty slow start. 5-6-2 on the road, 7-3-3 on the road. I think they might have the most road wins in MLS, trailing Toronto by one, tied for second. But Vancouver in their last match, I'm looking at it right now, get that 3-2 win over Real Salt Lake. So a team that's had some success recently, of course, they've got one Tony Chani, and this is the first meeting, Ralph, as you pointed out for us in the rundown, between Crew SC and Vancouver since that fateful trade, sending Tony Chani and a whole bunch of TAM money to get Kakuta Mane. In the time since, Tony Chani, 3 goals and assist in 21 games with Vancouver, which, you know, in comparison, in his entire career with Columbus, he had just, it looks like, 7-8 goals his entire career with Columbus. So, you know, nearly a fraction of that in this game with Toronto or Vancouver. He's certainly been a solid addition for that Whitecaps squad. Where do you think Columbus, looking at some of the great performances you've gotten out of Kakuta Mane, and some of the games where, you know, take last Sunday where Greg Berhalter didn't even think he was a player that he could put out there to preserve a tie. What do we think about that trade now in retrospect?
I mean, you know, you have to look back at the time that it was done because you had Tony Chani not even making the bench for Columbus. So, you know, while it's great that he has gone to Vancouver and done well, obviously, you know, better statistically than Kakuta, you know, I still don't know if I would say that it was a bad trade on Columbus's part. Has Kakuta been everything he could have been? No, but, you know, Kakuta hasn't been the Kakuta of a couple years ago in a while. So, you know, I think he's provided a good role for Columbus. I think Vancouver's gotten better. and obviously got that money. So, you know, I think the trade, you know, probably leans slightly in Vancouver's favor if we're picking a winner. But, you know, I think Columbus needed to make a move, and this was one that they found to do so.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, we had this discussion earlier in the podcast about Artur versus Mohamed Abu. Tony Chani, even at his current level in Vancouver, I don't think would be in that conversation. I really don't. So he still might not be playing, even if he had turned everything around. So I don't know. I think you got something for an asset that wasn't going to bring you anything in return. So it's good trade as far as I'm concerned.
And yeah, I'll finish up the thoughts here. I think, you know, between both of these players, you had guys that were kind of going, trekking in the same direction along the lines of their respective teams that they were previously on. And I think both teams went out really nicely. You know, Tony's kind of come in. Granted, he came in a little bit quicker than Kakuta and contributed almost immediately for the Whitecaps. And, you know, he did a very nice job. And Kakuta, you know, he's stepped up when he's needed to be there, when he's given the opportunities with the clutch goal against, what was it, Montreal. And then, you know, hitting it again against, I'm blanking on the last team that he scored against. But, you know, both players have stepped up nicely. You know, with Tony, you know you're going to get a solid defensive player who can distribute out of the back, can occasionally score or at least put the ball in the right area to score. Kakuta, you're going to get that blistering winger who's got good vision. And I think both teams come out well, but, you know, get back to me in December when contracts are up and find out where Kakuta's going to land for next year.
Yeah, and I think that does really, you know, that's where it hinges on. If Crew SC are able to extend Kakuta Mane, and so you get him, but if you end up just doing it for more or less a rental, with Mane, then I think, you know, that's it's certainly that trade will need to be reviewed a little bit more in depth. Vancouver will have a game between now and the matchup on, I believe, Saturday, as they will be taking on the Ethan Finley, speaking of players jettisoned from Columbus Crew who have found new life in their new surroundings, led Minnesota, whatever they're called, little happy loon ducks, Minnesota United FC Sporting Real. And so they'll take them on Wednesday. So you've got Minnesota or Vancouver on short rest. What are we looking at with in previewing in this matchup? Is this obviously against a team that, you know, now Vancouver, one of the better teams in the Western Conference, another Western Conference game, but with points, you know, being so hard to come by for Columbus with so many few games left, and yes, they've got some breathing room between them and Montreal, but not wanting that to get stuck in that sixth place spot. This looks like, I mean, every game now from the rest of the way out with just six remaining, needs to be a win-win, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver's a team that's been on a bit of a run, you know, similar to what Columbus has done recently. You know, obviously playing at home for them, you know, in my mind, I think you want to at least get out of there with a draw. You know, a win would be a bonus, I think. But, you know, this is a decent team. I've watched some of their games kind of up and down throughout the season. You know, obviously have played well recently, but a team that's really good on set pieces. I believe they have the most set piece goals. Something to be aware of there. You know, it'll be interesting. Columbus just played a team coming off short rest and couldn't shake off the rust to beat them at home. So, you know, that's obviously something to consider, but, you know, hopefully they'll be all right. You know, the team is flying out on Wednesday, so they're going to watch that game live. Berhalter seemed pretty excited about getting a scout in person, which means I don't have to go to crew practice this week. So, you know, that saves me some time.
For, you know, Vancouver, you know, they've got big names to look out for. Freddie Montero, Breck Shea, Usted, I mean, the guy between the pipes. I mean, you're running into another hot goalkeeper that could be kind of streaky. David Usted's been probably one of the more highly regarded goalkeepers in the league within the past couple of years, albeit he's had a questionable defense at times this year. But, you know, they've got great players on there. I'm excited to see how we match up. I like to think both of these teams do very well. It's going to be really a nice battle in the midfield. But both of these teams tactically are very sound. And like you said, Patrick, they're both running, you know, similar runs right now, basically at the same time, and they're making that push for the playoffs.
You mentioned that midfield battle, Ralph, and obviously, you know, Tony Chani, we know, and that's one of the things that I do think is an issue for Columbus when they traded away Tony Chani is the size and physicality. Arthur's the biggest, you know, central midfielder they've got. At what, 5'10", 5'11", and while he, you know, he's a scrappy player, same can be said for Abu and Will Trapp to that extent. None of them, you know, really north of 5'10". And you look at the starting central midfielders for Vancouver with the likes of Tony Chani, north of 6'4", and Ali Ghazal, the Egyptian, at 6'2", nearly 200 pounds. Those are some physical guys. This is going to be a battle in the midfield, and you worry, especially with those undersized central midfielders that Columbus has, you know, what that could mean with the size advantage that Vancouver has.
Well, yeah, you mentioned it with Ghazal and Chani, and then it's almost kind of like you think about with these guys grinding them down and then getting the ball to Freddie Montero or Christian Teixeira, or, you know, they've got the youngster Alfonso Davies, who's done fairly well for him, and Eric Hurtado coming in off the bench generally for him. They can mix it up, and I could see this, if Columbus isn't careful, they could get beat down in the midfield, get tired, and then have to start chasing some of these speedsters around and start losing foot races. And being out Jonathan Mensah, you know, you're presumably going to see Abubakar back there.
That's a good point. I forgot about
that. Presumably going to see Abubakar back there. You know, you haven't seen Alex Granolli in a while either, so you don't know what he's up to necessarily. But you're going to have bigger guys back there if they go with the four in the back. You know, this might be something that they may change around again. You know, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. But or pardon me, Saturday. You had me thinking about their first Vancouver's game. But you know, it'll be intriguing. I'm kind of curious to see how everybody matches up.
Alex, I have nothing to add.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know if you wanted to weigh in on that.
No, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup, but I don't know. I have no way of trying to predict this one.
You're going to have to, because that's what we do. We talk about things we know nothing about. We're podcasters.
That's why they pay us the big bucks.
One thing I think with, you mentioned Jonathan being out, we have yet to see Lawless play in a four-man back line. He did a little bit in the scrimmage the other day, but that was the first time I'd even seen it. So, you know, if they do stick with four in the back, which I think if they're going to play Pedro, Federico, and Justin, you kind of have to. It'll be interesting to see what kind of combination they go with back there, especially because that pairing's been so well, done so well between Jonathan and Josh.
You know what other combination and pairing that goes well with pretty much everything?
Buffalo Wings and Land Grant Beer.
That's right. Our good buddies, Land Grant Brewing Company and or Old North Arcade, a beer and Columbus crew with a bunch of friends. You can catch that game at either of those spots. Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street, East Franklinton. Head to landgrantbrewing.com or Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street and www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit both of those up. Both great places to watch the game Saturday. You know, fellas, you know, short of other maybe parting shots we might have, I think it might be time for those predictions, eh?
Hey, I have a question, though, real quick. Does Old North, and because I'm kind of still the rookie here, does Old North serve Land Grant beers at Old North? Because that's great synergy if that's the case.
I think they had last time I was there. I think they had some Lane Grant on tap. They've got a pretty good variety of, and it's rotating. Generally, are probably getting into, I'm guessing with both cases, but certainly with Old North Arcade, some of the pumpkin varieties as we are turning to fall.
Can't confirm. Old North is expanding too, and they're adding more stuff. So I can't confirm that.
Dope.
So, and a porch, a bigger porch to dope be dope porch on.
Exactly, and as, it's not like there's any football that worth watching on Saturdays anymore.
Yeah, it's over. as you were, Mr. Logan, my apologies for interrupting.
No, please. And that's a welcome interruption. And certainly, fellas, we'll, I guess, hand it over now to Patrick Murphy to lead off predictions for Saturday's match.
I've been thinking about this here since we started talking about Vancouver, and I'm really torn because I could see the team going out there and, you know, getting a result, come back with like a 1-1 2-2 draw, but I just don't have a great feeling. You know, I'm gonna reserve the right to change my prediction for when we do it later in the week on the site, but I'm gonna say Vancouver 2-1 right now.
Vancouver 2-1.
Yeah, I just don't like them going all the way over there.
BC Place is a unique place to play too. They play on plastic grass there.
That's true. Home of the BC Lions of the Canadian Football League. I saw a game there once.
Also home of your United States Women's National Team 2015 World Cup champions.
That's true. I forgot that women had to play on that garbage in the World Cup.
And the sun was shining in the Japan goalie's face when Carly Lloyd shot it from midfield. But I digress.
That was wonderful. All right, Ralph, actually now that you're up, you are up. So
I'm with Patrick on this one. You know, a cross-country flight, changing time zones, going against the team who's eagerly waiting for you, albeit that they are facing the Loons on Wednesday night, of which I'll be watching. But I digress. I mean, I didn't see a lot of things personally, and, you know, crucify me if you want, guys, you know, when you hear this episode tomorrow morning. But I think Ola's got the yips right now, and I'm a little scared because I don't know where the offense is going to come from right now. I'm going to go ahead and say 2-0 Vancouver.
Did you just say a guy has the yips that scored in three straight games?
Yeah, I was like,
ah. Well, he's got the yips when he's not using his head.
Well, he's only scored with his head in one straight game, so we're going to reevaluate your definition of yips after the podcast.
That's fine. I'll go to the principal's office after the podcast.
Yeah. He's got Ola Kamara since July the 29th, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches.
I said he may have a case of the yips.
May have. He also may have.
You should watch Wisconsin quarterbacks.
Yeah. Goals nearly.
I watched Scott Tolzien throw interceptions to the Los Angeles Rams yesterday like 6 times, so I'm okay on that right now.
Oh, that helped my fantasy team. Alex, bring it. Show them of little faith, as you said.
Yes.
Why they're so wrong.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm going to be very specific in what's going to happen in this match. It's going to be 0-0 until the 65th minute, and my boy Lalas Abubakar is going to get a header. 1-0, Columbus Crew SC, bringing home the 3 points.
Does it hit off the front of the mop top or middle of the mop top?
It's off his forehead.
Okay.
I'm also going to, I know this is going to surprise any of you longtime listeners, but I'm going with Columbus Crew SC in this one. I think
picked a loss? You haven't picked a loss
not a single time. Not a single time. And I will never do it. Because I'm a shameless homer. Maybe we need to put that as a disclaimer in the intro, but I am a shameless homer, and I have no shame. That's part of being shameless about it. I think Carusi get a 2-1 win. I'll say, you know, I'll give it some credit, but I think that you will see that front trio of Pipa Higuain, Pedro Santos, and Justin Miram just pick apart a tired back four and a slow central midfielder duo after that short rest, and they're going to be dangerous there on that wonderful AstroTurf and BC Place. And we're going to get goals from, we're going to see the first goal from Pedro Santos, as well as a clapper from Mohamed Abu. He's going to hit a Thunder Bastard from 40 yards out. It's going to be amazing.
What?
Yep.
a Thunder Bastard? Is that what I heard?
You guys are Man U fans. That's what Nikola or Modic hit.
Okay.
Come on, Ralph.
I've never heard the expression.
Now you don't know common secular vernacular.
I wasn't expecting it. I guess I just. I don't know. Oh my goodness.
Well, that should unless anybody else has some parting shots, that should wrap it up for this week. Any good thing, guys?
I'm just glad to be back because I need to learn what Thunder, whatever the hell you said, is in existence now.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to lose.
I think Ralph has podcast yips.
Hey, I've scored on every podcast, and I haven't missed since April, okay? Since I joined the show in April.
Score?
I don't know. Sam's not here anymore, so I know.
Sam's going to be mad because we're going to lose our, E for Everyone rating because of...
It's turned into the Howard Stern show all of a sudden.
Anyway, okay, that's going to do it for this week. Roll Tribe. Bye, buddies.
Baba Booey.